I think we've got to be consistent and say that it was outrageous. When you try to make something fair and the same, it generally ends up being completely unfair. Two unfair situations don't make one fair one. It's now just been two unfair situations. Hello there, and welcome back to the Zero Credentials F1 podcast. We're here to talk about what happened at Monza last weekend, where there was another record-breaking performance by Max Verstappen, and then papaya rules coming to the fore as well. We've got some stuff to talk about with that. Let's roll the intro and get right into it. Yeah, so Monza 2025, it started off pretty good, didn't it?
It had a lot of potential, and we'll get to it, but I left it feeling a little bit flat, I'll be honest with you.
Did you?
A little bit flat indeed. I mean, credit where it's due, I'm sure we'll get onto it, but Max was sublime, completely next level. And at a track which equalises most cars in terms of they all have to have the minimum wing and just dump as much downforce as they can, that Red Bull was out of this world.
Yeah, it totally was. I before the race, I was super excited about it because I think the old school traditional tracks have a special buzz about them. Tracks like Monza and Suzuka and Silverstone, Brazil. Do you know what I mean? Those type of old school tracks, they've been on the calendar pretty much forever.
Yeah.
It always gives you that extra bit of excitement, doesn't it? And the Italian fans, I think, make it special as well with the all the tifosi and stuff.
Because they're mental. I love it. Exactly. Absolutely love it. Nobody should get that excited watching Formula One, even as a relatively straightforward race.
I thought qualifying was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was.
And then the first few laps of the race, I thought, were absolutely thrilling.
Yeah.
And Charles Leclerc just seems to be driving angry at the moment, and he was all over the shop, wasn't he? I was loving it. It was brilliant.
I like an angry Charles. He does. I think that the key, it was the main thing about quali and the actual start of the race is it was pretty unpredictable. It was unexpected.
Yeah,
for Charles even just to have a bit of a go was very exciting, and it was a good start. It was a good start to the race.
I think, I was the same though. I felt a little bit flat at the end of it, and I think I texted you in White saying, I think part of the issue with this race was it felt from about lap five they were all managing tyres because the gaps between the top six or seven opened up to about 6 seconds between all of them. And they're all managing tyres. And I think that's because of it with the speed of the straight, it naturally lends itself to being a one-stop strategy, doesn't it? I heard Ted saying that even though the pit lane is not particularly any longer than other tracks, it's because the speed that they're doing past it.
Yeah, the relative speed. Yeah. You're wasting 25 seconds or something like that.
Exactly. And I think that has really impacted the excitement of the race when they're all managing tyres, personally. I think that's what's gone on.
Well, I think Brundle said during the race, we should maybe look at a mandatory two-stop here because a one-stop is obvious at this stage and that forces you to manage your tyres. Yeah. Whereas a two-stop, at least you're forced to get in and then potentially make an error or have a locked wheel nut or the guy on the front left apparently not understanding what he's there for, but we'll get on to that.
They have done that though, haven't they? Was it Qatar they did that?
I think so.
So it's not without precedent, is it? But I remember at Qatar when Qatar when they did it, they were all really tired at the end of the race because they'd been flat out the entire race. That's not going to be an issue at Monza though, because when they're on the straight, they're not actually doing all that much, so that it wouldn't, and the race is quick as well, so it wouldn't be as tiring just going full flat out the whole time.
Absolutely. And they should Yeah, where the more twists and turns, you're putting more strain through the neck and the muscles and the G-force through the body. But, yeah, there are long periods here where they literally just put their foot down and then they can turn off for 15 seconds, yeah. Other than twiddle a little bit with brake bias. But, yeah, it just didn't really deliver. There was still, when you look at it on paper, there was still plenty of overtaking, pit stops. But you're not really going to get sort of safety car situations. You're going to get a few people taking each other out. I'm sure we'll come on to Carlos Sainz and Oliver Bearman before too long. But on paper, there seemed to be enough there. I just didn't grip me.
Yeah. There was a few different strategies going on, wasn't there? So the people towards the back pitted a bit earlier. Mm. The leaders went a bit longer. There wasn't all that much excitement in the pits, apart from Bortoleto and Alonso coming in at the same time.
Yeah,
Bortoleto's taking it conservatively up to the speed limit line, whereas Alonso's just banzaied it in
brilliant.
With absolute perfection. They've then nailed the pit stop. He's overtaken his protege in the pit lane and just giving him a free lesson as they're driving out of pit lane.
You know, he was just giving it a cowboy big yee as he was coming out the back of there. That was absolutely stunning. But I love that about Fernando, because it would sicken me if, when you called in for a pit stop, if there's any tire left whatsoever, and he wasted that in a cloud of smoke because he just hit the pit stop line. And there was nothing left, but that just shows they're the margins. That's a world championship mindset, to say, I won't just tootle in here. I've got to gun it to the line and risk absolutely everything. Because if that goes wrong, he's up Bortoleto's backside.
Yeah, literally.
He's ruined his race. He's absolutely wrecked. And he's killed it. But that's where the margins are made up.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, he had car failure.
DNF. Ended up
with a DNF, which is a shame. Should we talk about Max Verstappen quickly?
Yes.
I agree. I think it was just one of a classic Max Verstappen performance. I thought when Lando got in front briefly and then he couldn't get away, I thought when Lando got ahead, he'd be putting some distance between them, but he couldn't, could he? He couldn't get away. Max got himself back, obviously charged his battery up for a couple of laps, got back into the DRS, and then he was gone after that, wasn't he?
Could not get near him. I got a little bit excited when there was some pretty severe blistering on Max's fronts just before the pit stops. And I thought, because there was still, I reckon he went another three to five laps after that. Yeah. And they looked pretty gnarly, to be fair. And I thought, oh, well, that's it. He's run off. He's burnt his tyres up. And the pace must truly be with McLaren, who are just sort of managing the tyres a little bit. But no, the only time I think of masterclass, absolute masterclass. That was probably the most commanding race that I've seen Max lead, because he was under pressure early doors. He never looked flustered in terms of when Lando did get past him for that short period of time. It was just like, okay, I'm coming to get you. I've got the car under me and I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And then he managed the race from the front from there, didn't he? Mm. Which I think it's sort of been clear over the last couple of seasons that's not easy to do, managing a race from the front like that. And he just slotted back into that so comfortably. So he has broken the track record in qualifying. I like that. It did make me chuckle that Lando broke the track record. Held that record for a total of about 4 seconds. and then Max jumped back in front and took the lap record. Go on.
They're not even going to put you in the Guinness Book of Records for that amount of time. It's like, sack it, yeah.
And then he went on and is now holding the record for the fastest ever race in F1.
Yes, an average of 155.791 miles an hour.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Not even 2 hours of your life. That was another gripe maybe I had, that as a consequence, the race only lasted an hour and 10 or just over that.
Yeah, it was 71, 72 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's I appreciate they've got a limit. Or was it 200 miles or something that they try and...
It's a distance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something like 200 miles or 300 kilometres or whatever that translates to. But yeah, the fastest F1 race in history, and not by a small margin. I think it was like a minute and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. And he had the thick end of 20 seconds ahead of the rest of the field. I mean, that is... It's approximately half a second a lap, just under. Yeah. 4 tenths, 3 tenths, 12 that in your back pocket over the likes of McLaren in the form that they're in at the minute. And Ferrari giving it absolutely everything they've got for their home race. Impressive.
It'd be interesting if Max and Red Bull have found something more in that car for the time being. What effect that will have on the championship. Because let's imagine that Oscar or Lando win a race and Max finishes second. That's pushing the points gap a bit further, isn't it? So I think it's good. I think it's good for the championship that Max is right back up there at the front. Whether it'll last, I'm not really sure. Certainly, I think it'll suit in Las Vegas, but maybe some of the corners where they're fast.
It was an interesting one because I think it was the team principal said during or right at the end of the race that Max took a very different direction in setup.
Yeah, I heard that.
Indeed. They may have found something by accident. Yeah. That the car just responds to a sweet spot, to something that on paper and given all the calculations, it should never work.
Yeah,
but just everything starts to jam together at this right sort of frequency of something, and he's just found it. And if they go pursuing that and it proves to be a race-winning formula, then it could really disrupt the rest of the season. And I think that would come into Oscar's advantage, because if Max starts winning at the sort of rate that he typically does win at, he could win half of the remaining races, and then the gaps between a second and a third, or a third and a fourth for Lando and Norris, and vice versa, there's a lot fewer points to win between them. So it doesn't make it as easy as winning 7-point gap between first and second.
I think you're right as well. I think Lewis Hamilton's been having some of these issues at Ferrari as well, is that when you are maybe 2 or 3+ times world champion, despite all the data that the teams can see, they should probably listen to a driver of that caliber when telling you something, shouldn't they? Because there's still an X factor, isn't there? Mm. Like an element that data can't explain.
Yeah,
and I think that's what's so special about F1, because you can give a driver the best car in the world, but it still requires a little bit of magic fairy dust on top, doesn't
it? Well, and that screams also loud for Yuki Tsunoda, who's not got a dog of a car. On paper, that is a high-performing, race-winning and highly effective vehicle, but he cannot tame it.
Yuki. I feel so bad for him. Like, it's a proper stitch-up, isn't it? Like, and it's sounding like he's not going to have a seat next year now at all.
And I think this year they've enjoyed the sweet, sweet Japanese yen that he brought with him.
Yeah.
But I took some notes and I just put, he's gone. Tsunoda's gone. He's no more
where
for this
else is,
spot.
There's nowhere for him to go, is there? Like, it's because what you're sending him back to Racing Bulls at this point? He's had ages, hasn't he? He's had 4 or 5 seasons now.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's succumbed to the curse of that second seat, and he's not a bad racer. He has performed in other vehicles.
The sad thing is that he doesn't really have anywhere else to go, does he? It's not like Alex Albon bounced back, Gasly bounced back. Obviously, Liam Lawson was brand new, so it makes sense to put him back in the Racing Bull, although he's having an up-and-down season. And I think they talked about it during the race on commentary, but if you're Isaac Hadjar and they come calling in the summer saying, you're going in the seat, mate. Are you telling them to do one, or are you dutifully taking it?
That's bittersweet. I mean, I think he'd, it's the parent team, the sister team, but he's performed fantastically, and his reward should be something better than what he's in at the moment. And
because he's nicked a point again, hasn't he? He got finished in 10th, which was from the pit lane is a tremendous achievement.
He's done it. That's an exceptional race in somewhere where you're going to struggle to make up. I mean, you know, they're 15, 20 seconds off down the road by the time you've had your... They've got a great head start there. Yeah. And he's looking like the heir apparent and is... I think the second Red Bull seat, I don't think it is cursed, but I think it's probably enough within the paddock or within the racer's mind. These can be very superstitious people to think, well, I'm not sure I'm going to do this, but equally they're super confident human beings and think, well, I'll be the one who tames this beast. And
if I was his representation, I'd be cautious of the power that the helmet has, which I think is still quite great, isn't it? Especially now the horn has gone. But I'd be saying to Red Bull, like, tell me that next year's car is going to be more drivable, and that it's not just a Max Verstappen machine that is undrivable for everybody else. You'd want some sort of reassurance for him, wouldn't you? That it's not going to.
That's it. Even do it on a trial basis and say, I'll give you 3 races. I want my substantive seat with racing bulls, but I'll give me 3 races and let's see what happens. Because actually, I think it's strange for Hadjar at the moment because he's not only impressed within racing bulls and within the sister team. I think people up and down the grid are looking at him.
Yeah.
Because he's stood out. He's been probably the most consistent. Bortoleto's really started to up his game.
In
the past couple of races, and just seems again, to have grown in confidence.
Points, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was he eighth? Was he
eighth? Yeah, and just starting to ooze confidence now. And does a bit of follow my leader with Fernando.
Bortoleto's so relaxed in the car as well. Like, I don't know if you saw some of the radio messages, but at the end he was asking about Max winning, and he was just like, "Oh wow, this guy."
Yeah,
which is nice, but he just sounded so relaxed the way he's asking about other people in the race, and he knew he'd done well himself. Do you know what I mean?
He got
some points for Sauber/Audi, and
he's starting to enjoy it, and he's clearly got some processing power to be figuring out how other people's races are going and where he is relative to them, because you've got a million things to think about.
He's in a good spot though, Bortoleto, isn't he? Yeah. He's going to be there for the birth of the Audi project. He's got Jonathan Wheatley as team principal, who's an up-and-comer, obviously with a lot of experience from Red Bull. Hülkenberg is a great driver. I think Bortoleto, I think he should be very excited about his future. Alex Albon, another notable mention, just consistently scoring points. He's up there.
But after an awful quali as well, an absolute dog of a quali.
He's 7th in the championship behind Lewis Hamilton at the moment. So, yeah, proper good performance from them. I think Williams are on the up as well, aren't they? It feels like the fast tracks suit them. Bit of a stinker for Carlos Sainz.
Some of them are. Yeah, I put in that nightmare. And this is a talking point because Carlos just had a race where he seemed to be getting angry very early. He had something going on with his battery. He was just clearly pissed off that they'd woken up that morning and he was having a bit of a rough day. And then another issue that the stewards have brought to light is I can't see how his connection with Ollie Bearman was a 10-second penalty for Bearman. I thought it was a racing incident, maybe veering towards Carlos cutting in far too tight and not giving him any racing room at all. What's your view?
I mean, to be honest, by that point, I wasn't paying 100% attention to the race. No, I think it's similar to the one that Carlos got done for in the last race.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I think we can just leave it as a racing incident.
Yeah.
But
touch Wales.
I mean, yeah, it's a tough one because it was tight, wasn't it? But yeah, it's...
I'd be fuming if I was Berman.
Yeah, and he's had an up and down season as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
A little bit, so...
Not done too much.
Let's talk about McLaren and their shenanigans, because they, on the pit stop, they only did one pit stop. They left it quite late.
Yeah.
Because that medium tyre seemed to be working for them. They wanted to, they'd made it quite clear on the radio that they wanted to go to softs early doors, and they were going to extend, probably to put some pressure on Max to stay on those mediums longer than he wanted to. And then, Max had a good enough lead, didn't he, to be able to still wait, even if there was a safety car. And then, I mean, he pitted, didn't he? Max pitted.
He jumped, he jumped. Yeah,
so Max pitted, and then the McLaren stirred out, so there was no benefit whatsoever of bringing Piastri in first. It just made no sense to me, especially when Piastri was creeping up behind him.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got into Orlando, not deliberately, but they got on the wire to Lando first and said, listen, we're going in for the softs. Happy to take them. And he went, does the other car want it first? Because I think he thought, well, are we going to try and cover off Charles, who was, as you say, everyone was about 6 seconds apart. It wasn't a massive threat. But I think he was trying to do the nice thing, saying, well, we're all going around here 6 seconds apart. Not much is going to change. It makes no difference whether you let him go first or not.
I thought it did, though. As soon as they pitted Piastri first, and then by the time Lando came in the pits, I was shouting at the screen, saying, like, they've stitched him up here.
Yeah.
And then he gets into the pit box. Maybe he goes a bit long, whatever, but they mess the pit stop up. And then he's behind Piastri, almost a carbon copy of what happened in Hungary. Although I still think there's quite a few differences, because in Hungary, Piastri never would have caught Lando last year.
Yeah.
So he was forced to give the win to Piastri. This time, I mean, I think we've got a couple of Australian fans who've been having a dig at us. I think we've got to be consistent and say that it was outrageous, because I was outraged last year when they gave that win to Piastri. I'm outraged again, because it was just ridiculous. I thought bringing Piastri in first was a terrible mistake for McLaren. Then they made another mistake with a pit stop. I thought at that point, they've stitched Lando right up. The championship's going to Piastri. And then I thought, actually, no, that's a bit like Hungary. Are they going to switch it round? And they did. And everybody, including Max in the cool-down room, was just like, what, they swapped it because of a bad pit stop?
Yeah, it's I've got a caveat to that. And I think, because I've got a firm view in different scenarios. Had it just been a typical scheduled stop, and it was Oscar's turn, and his Lando's privilege of going first he'd already taken his stop and all that sort of thing, then fair enough, it's a racing, it's one of those things. A wheel nut can lock, you can go along, whatever. It just would have been one of those things, because Lando offered, or at least appeared to offer, the pit stop to Oscar, which Oscar wouldn't have known necessarily, and as a bit of a safety buffer, team work to potentially just buffer any influence of Charles, then yes, he has to give it back. But had Lando just gone into the pits, lost his 6 seconds, and just had a threaded wheel nut, then fair enough, that's racing, that's tough. But I think because it was sort of manufactured by the team, it was a poor decision by the team. Don't disagree with that in the slightest. But in this instance, I think it was worthy of giving him it back. Had Lando just had a shit pit stop, then no, he can't have it back.
I don't know. At this point, I've kind of had enough of Pyrrhus. I'm sick of kind of hearing them talk about it because what I don't understand what it is. It's obviously they're allowed to race on track, but then they're not allowed to do any different strategy. This is actually a bugbear I have just in general in real life. Is that when you try to make something fair and the same, it generally ends up being completely unfair because the situation's being artificially manipulated.
Yeah.
And it isn't going to work out fair. The fair thing to do is just let the two sides of the garage go for it. That would be fair.
That's how it used to be in the 80s and 90s, to be fair.
Well, even Mercedes did that with Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Rosberg was brilliant again.
Sign him up full time. Sign him. He asks the questions that everybody else thinks we probably shouldn't ask that, and he's like, "Fuck it, I'm world champion." On my record, it will always say world champion. So I'm saying what I want.
Yeah, they were loving him on the podium as well, weren't they? It was funny.
Yeah, yeah. Love Nico. The bad thing about that entire incident is, as soon as the McLaren pitwell realised that they had a conflict and that Oscar was going to get out, Oscar was going to be ahead of Lando, they shit themselves. They will have absolutely shit themselves at that moment in time and thought, we're going to have to intervene in this.
I think my main point is, is that two unfair situations don't make one fair one. You can't add, it's not like a double negative. You can't add up two unfair situations and make a fair one. They're just two. It's now just been two unfair situations. In Hungary to Lando, and because they messed up the pit stop order then, which put Lando ahead. They've done the same thing this time, plus the addition of a messed up actual pit stop, and Piastri's gone ahead. And then they've just manipulated it to kind of, it killed my buzz a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about F1 is it gets me going.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I was outraged that what they'd done to Lando because I'm a Lando fan over Piastri. But then I wanted to finish the race outraged, full of emotion. When they reversed it, I was like, oh, all right then. That's that then. It's like I want...
I know what you're saying, because it's not beyond papaya rules to now say, well, Lando had a bit... he had a DNF because his engine blew up. So, Oscar, we're going to put some spanners in your gearbox and see what happens, and maybe you get a DNF. But at least it's fair because Lando had a DNF. And it's... Yeah, I agree. Just let them race. My emerging philosophy now is the least interference, the better. I'm starting to think about, actually, the pit stops have far too much say in the outcome of a race. And I don't know if I'm against the idea now of just giving them all one set of tyres that will do the duration of the race and just let them fight it out between them, because then the racing will do the talk. You know, something with enough durability.
I had a good one, actually.
A full race.
I did hear a good one. I can't remember who it was that said it. It might have been Rosberg, actually. Is bring back it was Alonso. Bring back refueling, is what he said.
Yeah.
Because then not only do you have a tire offset, you have a fuel offset. And I think at the time I didn't particularly like it when they were refueling, because I was worried about them setting on fire and stuff, which did happen, didn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm sure they could do the technology even better now with that. It would, I think, with the current state that these cars are, big, heavy things, full of safety equipment and stuff, and electronic motors and things.
Yeah.
I think a fuel offset would add a really interesting dynamic.
I never had a problem with the actual refueling back in the day. I know that there's always images of, I think it was Kimi Raikkonen going down the pit lane with the entire fuel hose assembly hanging out the back of his car like a massive streamer. but it could make, you know, the lightest and most nimble car at a time of the racer's choosing. So yes, it's the equivalent of fill your tanks early doors, go on the hard tires, see how long you can draw that out, and the benefit, the trade-off for that is that you're going to get a session at the end with the lightest possible vehicle and fuel, and that you can go on the softs and you can absolutely destroy it. And we saw a few races actually back then where somebody could be at the back of the field and really hunt down numbers and numbers and numbers of people on the grid to do that. And you don't really see that now. It's just, I'm not resolved to it one way or the other. I just think there's too much faffing. It's too much fannying about.
I just think this for me, this race showed that when they are trying to get their tyres to the end, they were managing tyres from about lap five, and that was the rest of the race. And by the time they all did do their pit stop, the race was kind of done by that point. And I think it just lacked a little bit of excitement. I think Monza particularly would be good with refueling. Because
it's still a great track. I'm willing to try anything at this stage, as long as it's equitable and not going to necessarily distort anything. And I think there's too much tyre management in my mind, and too many vehicles going at 80% of full pelt just to protect the tyres, and that's not what the spectator's there for necessarily.
You've gone all echoey again.
Have I?
Oh no, you're back again. You're back. Have you got anything else to? Oh, look, I've just put the music on like it's the end of the show, but we need to have we need to have a quick look at the points this week, which I've totally forgotten about. Pressing all the wrong buttons now. Let's turn the music off, right? Have a quick look at this, then we'll end the show. I promise.
Slick.
I'm not going to talk through them. If you're on the podcast listening, just know that nothing's changed because the predictions are up on the screen and none of us did very well. We were all on for a point at one stage with Oscar Piastri in second place until Papaya Rules came along and took our point away artificially.
Not would have levelled us out anyway. It would have been a distortion.
It would have.
Yeah.
I think White's got the top five correct, but in the wrong order, which is worth nothing. So,
but he's still maintained his lead.
He has. I'll put that up as well. So White is in the lead with 16 points. I'm on the front row with him in P2. And Nelly.
Oh, amateur.
Needs a slipstream down amateur. To turn one. He's currently lagging with 8 points. So plenty of time. We've seen it flip around already. So
Papaya Rules, let me through.
Yes, so we should equal it all up and do double points for the last race of the season, so we all have a chance. That's what we need to do. Make sure we can all have a chance of winning, because that would be fair, wouldn't it?
Well, that's it. If we all get a chance at the very end, and then we'll say, we've gone racing, tie-dye. We've gone racing, mate. Like Mr. Massey did way back when. But actually, it just occurred to me, looked at my notes. Two quick points. George, gorgeous George, solid as ever.
Yep.
Classic fifth. He's going to get the world record for fifths in a given season. And I think Ferrari's performed to the maximum. Big shout out to Lewis because I'm a fanboy. And he gained four positions. And
yeah, that's good.
That's no mean feat. Especially, and he felt a bit. In the post-race interview, he felt like he'd done okay. He felt like he'd done as much as the vehicle could offer, and I think Charles was the same. But
I'm not sure we're going to see much more from Ferrari for the rest of the season, to be honest. They're going to be in and around that top five, top six, aren't they? And they'll probably finish second in the championship.
That was their chance to roll the dice, and they came nowhere near, to be fair.
Well, thank you very much for watching and listening. Appreciate all our podcast listeners, especially, everybody. We love you all.
Yeah, we do. I love the podcast listeners the most.
Right, give us a like. give us a subscribe, leave a comment, all that good stuff, and we'll see you in about a week or so for a preview of the Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan.
That's the one. The Baku.
See you later, guys.
Bye,
thank
everybody.
You.
Bye.